This episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Today we continue our deep characterization series with episode 7, where we're dealing with cognitive style. Of all of the things we've covered so far, this is the first one that you cannot afford to ignore. You can screw up all sorts of stuff from episodes 1 through 6, and your readers will forgive you as long as the cognitive style is consistent. Basically, the way that your character thinks will have a particular flavor, and if that flavor doesn't maintain its verisimilitude, your readers will leave you. They will stop trusting you, because they won't be able to predict your character, and being able to predict someone is essential for forming a trust bond. I'll explain why later on in the series. But if you want your readers to stick through the story, they have to be able to trust you. People in general tend to have three basic ways of engaging the world cognitively. Three kinds of cognitive styles. They run along a spectrum. A cognitive style is the attitude with which you engage the world. It's the style of reasoning you employ. Everybody employs reasoning. Even your emotions employ reasoning. You may have heard psychologists, particularly clinical psychologists, talk about how emotions aren't rational. And that's true. Emotions are, by definition, irrational. However, emotions are always reasonable. And the reason that they are reasonable is that they come from somewhere, and the moment you have them, your brain invents a story that plausibly explains them. Whether or not that story is actually true, there is a reasonable feeling chain of causation that goes all the way back. Very important to remember in characterization, because that's one of the key things to keeping your characters acting in character. And it actually brings us to the first point on this spectrum, which is emotional reasoning. People who are emotional reasoners engage the world on the basis of their emotions. It's how they react to it in the moment. The way they feel at any given time shapes their reality, more so than it does for anybody else. This means that they will move their reality around to avoid moderately unpleasant experiences, and they will make tremendous sacrifices to have moderately pleasant or even peak experiences. Because everything in their life, their opinion of the quality of their life and of themselves as a person is connected to how they feel in any given moment. So if they're happy, they think life is pretty good, and they think of themselves as being generally good and decent people. And if they're angry or depressed, they don't just feel bad, they think that they are bad. And there's no differentiation for them between their state of mind at the moment and their essential identity. Now, in the middle of the spectrum, you get where most people sit. This is actually the de facto operative mode for humans and for, indeed, mammals in general. And that is the intuitive. Lord Houghton, I think it was? Houghton? I can't remember his name. There was an English lord who once said that there's nothing wrong with intuition. Intuition is just reason in a hurry. And he's right. Intuition is not a rational process, but it is a pattern recognition process that happens. People who are intuitive observe the world around them and make bets and guesses based on what feels plausible, what feels like it should be true. They'll go to a chosen career because it feels right. They'll pick a religion because it feels right to them. They'll pick their spouse because they feel like the one. This is how most people act most of the time. And it works for most people most of the time. It's got a few characteristic weaknesses, but this is the default operating position for most people. The center of your bell curve is always going to sit here. Now, on the far other end of the spectrum, away from emotional, you get the analyst. your highly analytical thinkers. These are people that have a process for how they do things. They will consider it a rational process. And it doesn't have to be logical or indeed according to the rules of critical thinking and reason that we understand in late 21st century with hundreds of years of philosophy and cognitive studies behind us. Every culture has their class of analysts, and they reason according to rules that they've internalized from their culture. And people are born with an analytical bent. It tends to be a characteristic of people with high general intelligence, particularly visual spatial intelligence. But you do get people on the low end of the general intelligence distribution who still have a very analytical way of looking at the world. Analytical thinking is more common among people on the autism spectrum than it is among the general population. Analytical thinkers are very methodical. They deconstruct things. And you can learn, an intuitive person, a regular middle-of-the-road intuitive person, can learn to be analytical. This is what teaching critical thinking does to someone of average or better intelligence who's got a generally normative cognitive style. Analytical thinking is problem-solving. It looks at evaluating the quality, relative qualities of evidence. It looks at fine-grained differences between what's trustworthy and what's not. And it's very concerned with making accurate predictions and finding the right answer. Intuitive cognition, on the other hand, is looking for good enough. The analyst is generally looking for right. This has some real strengths and some real weaknesses, and it depends on the situations your character is in. But that end of things is not particularly what I'm interested in talking about right now. What I'm wanting to bring home with this episode is that everybody falls along this spectrum. Their general attitude of engagement with the world, their general approach to all the information that's coming into their senses all the time, from the weather to social information to stuff they read in books, from the highly emotional to the highly analytical and everywhere in between, your character is going to sit somewhere on this spectrum. And if they sit somewhere on this spectrum, they better stay there unless they've got a reason to move, or your readers will notice and they'll punish you for it. Because people in the real world simply do not move much on this spectrum without a real strong push. For example, almost anyone placed under a heavy enough burden of stress and pressure can be pushed all the way from the extreme analytical end of the spectrum to the extreme emotional end of the spectrum and be reduced to a basic sort of animal responsiveness to the world around them and have their sense of self collapse to the moment-to-moment experience. This also happens with people in hypnotic states. I don't just mean trances or under the influence of drugs. I mean people who haven't had enough sleep will get to be like this. They'll react with the same amount of anger towards spilling their coffee as they will to finding out they've been drafted. Exhaustion will push your characters toward the emotional end of the spectrum, and if you've got an analytical character, they're going to notice this is happening and struggle to get back, and they'll be successful or not, depending on the other things you've set up in the story. So, that's how cognitive style works. It's one of the fundamentals to good character building. So when you've developed a character and you're in a spot and you're trying to figure out how she's going to react to something, take a moment and go back and look and observe what their cognitive style has been so far in the book or the short story. Observe what their internal monologue, what their actions are telling you about the way they engage the world. If you're a new writer, chances are they will engage the world very much in the same way you do. If you're a more advanced writer, or if you're trying to do more exotic characters, this may take a little bit more of the observation-y thing. But observe where they are, and then keep in mind where they're sitting on this spectrum as you move forward. It will help you get over some humps. Next time when I come back,
I will discuss locus of control.
And in between now and then, we will be taking your questions. Please do keep sending them in. We are running thin on them, and we need more. That's feedback at jdsawyer.net, or drop them on the blog, or drop them in the contact form at the website, theeverydaynovelist.com. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc., and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.